This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, thanks for joining. Please make sure you subscribe to follow us on all the various platforms here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube. The stuff we write on Substack, as well as quick takes on Instagram and on Threads. If you're enjoying what we're putting out there, please make sure you're sharing with all your friends and family. And if you have questions or comments about the stuff we're putting out there, please make sure you leave them in comments to us. We'll be more than happy to cover them in future talks.
Have you ever thought, how could they not see it? The information's everywhere. We find it at the tips of our fingers doing simple internet searches. Yet there's people that seem to either refuse to learn what science has to offer as factual evidence, or more importantly, are unwilling to unlearn the myths and misconceptions that they hold on to. But why is that? Are they just old dogs that can't learn new tricks, or is there something more? Well, let's talk about that.
Warning. The following presentation contains information that might contradict what you have previously heard, or believed to be true, about how the human body works, and contains material that is not suitable for closed-minded individuals. Enjoy.
So let's go ahead and examine why people don't let go of the misconceptions about the human body, but more importantly, what we can do to overcome that resistance. Because yes, we can teach an old dog new trick. Yes, we can teach people to let go of the myths and misconceptions. It just requires a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of frustration to unteach the myths and misconceptions that we like to hold on to. It seems like in every conversation that takes place surrounding health, wellness, diet, exercise, nutrition, metabolism, there comes a point in the conversation where someone chimes in with the, well, that's just not right. Here's what you should know. I am personally going to claim that, yeah, that's me at some point in time too. But what I don't do, and what a lot of people who are looking at here in terms of this old dog new trick do, is that they will then preach about their opinion. And they'll preach about an unsupported opinion. They'll preach on what they feel is true, what they think is true, without actually having any evidence to support their position. And when they're challenged, the retort is just the same long list of catchphrases. The long list of catchphrases that like to mythicize how the body works. They produce a laundry list of misconceptions that were once valid, but have long been debunked. Or will throw out a whole bunch of conspiracy theories about why things might be or why things might happen, without understanding why there is myths and why there's misconceptions and what the perpetuation of those myths and misconceptions happen to be. It leads to questions that have vexed me as an educator and has vexed a whole lot of people for a long period of time. Why does it take more time to unteach a misconception, unteach a myth, than it does to teach the information in the first place? It takes me more time to reteach students wrong information than it does to teach them the correct information. Because we have to first unlearn what is wrong and then learn what is right. How do some of us get to the point of holding on to a misguided belief, a misguided or debunked misconception, regardless of how much evidence is there? We know it's not just about the lack of information. Have you ever tried to go to the last page of an internet search? The amount of information out there is daunting. It seems to be endless. The difficulty comes from the interactions of the physiological responses that occur when we are learning stuff that is coupled with the cognitive biases, the emotional investments to what we believe is true, that hinder the ability to unlearn things that we need to unlearn in order to learn things that we should be learning. Issues that inhibit learning, or more importantly, unlearning. And it only gets more daunting when we throw in there all of the social reinforcements that lead us to hold on to beliefs and become an inherent challenge to any type of scientific or health literacy that is necessary in order to have intellectual conversations, intellectual debates about the topics that we need to have as relates to health, as relates to wellness, as relates to understanding the myths and misconceptions that are there about how our body works. Social reinforcements that provide us with rewards for holding on to the myths, holding on to the misconceptions, even when there is so much more evidence that says the myths and misconceptions are wrong factually. It's a confluence of factors that make letting go of a deeply held belief feel like abandoning part of oneself. An impact that is at the crux of why it seems like we've been progressively undoing public health initiatives, taking steps away from following the use of evidence-based best practices, especially over the last few years. And it explains why some gather into echo chambers that utilize anecdotes and logical fallacies as evidence to explain the rationales that reinforce the preconceived notions for what is correct, what is true. There's a lot of noise that wants to blame this on the algorithms, wants to blame this on the social media influencers that have limited the discourse that we have or come into the discourse and simply look at it in terms of an oversimplification. But that, in terms of the discourse here, in terms of learning and unlearning, oversimplifies that. These myths and misconceptions took hold long before the algorithms determined our news sources, long before the algorithms determined where we get our information from. And the difficulty of unteaching incorrect information was known well before we had any of these social media influencers determining that their level of credibility, put quotes around that, is the same as those of us who have spent a lifetime studying and empirically experimenting on the topic. Why is it so difficult to unlearn or unteach the myths and misconceptions? Well, unlike what some people might want to think about, it's the science, dummy. The science is one of the reasons why it's so difficult. While the problem is complex and multifaceted, and is rooted deeply in psychology and in culture, it really comes down to the very architecture of our brain and reflects on not only what we're teaching and how we're teaching, but how our brain works when we're learning. It goes into the physiology and the anatomical changes that take place in our brain when we learn, or what happens in our brain because we place ourselves into a fight or flight response when preconceived notions are challenged, particularly when those preconceived notions are part of our identity. It's a fight or flight response that becomes more pronounced when we have already taken the assumed position of knowing the truth. It's why people will get embarrassed in classrooms when the professor or when the teacher asks a question and no one wants to provide an answer, because they feel like the embarrassment of providing a wrong answer is worse than the silence of no one answering. It's a fight or flight response that becomes more pronounced when we've already taken that assumed position of knowing the truth about the topic and have the preconceived notion of what is true as being the foundation of our lifestyle. Responses that also materialize to hinder learning when we place ourselves, rightly or wrongly, as being the expert on the topic, the authority that should be giving the answers, not receiving the answers. Not realizing that those of us who are experts regularly go through a self-recognition of acknowledging we don't know everything, even when others might think that we do or might say that we do. It's a position where those who wrongly place themselves within this continuum of knowing it may retort to those who are experts as a quote-unquote know-it-all in an attempt to discredit any information that is contrary to what they want to believe to be true or think is true, without realizing that their knowledge base is not as expansive as the knowledge base of the expert on that specific topic. What we have to remember is that in either case, whatever we're looking at in terms of this stress towards the position, we are immediately placed into a sense of stress. And that sense of stress is done as a response to a challenge to the idea. It's a response that sets off a cascade of responses within our body known as fight or flight. It's a change in our physiology that alters how our brain is working. It alters how our physiology is working. It's why when we get embarrassed by offering an incorrect answer in class, we turn red or we withdraw from the situation. It's this physiological response to that challenge that puts us into a amygdala-reliant position. We become more reliant on our amygdala and on the areas of our brain that are going to be responding to threats. It makes us more likely to rely upon the heuristics, the things that we believe are true, the things that generate stereotypical responses or stereotypical ideas about conditions that make us less likely to be open to newer information or information that causes us to challenge those specific heuristics. It also makes us less likely to critically think and retain the contextual information of what is being presented to us. It's not that we don't want to learn the new ideas. It's not that we can't learn the new ideas. It's that our brain won't allow us to learn those new ideas. Or at least not until we get out of that fight or flight response. Not until we're able to reach a point physiologically where we're at a state of ease and exit the fight or flight response. We need that relaxation in order to learn, because we have to rewire the networks within our brains. And just like remodeling our home, it's a multi-stage process. There needs to be the demolition of the old in order to...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Build the new, which for the brain has to take place at the same time. We have to tear down the wall. We have to strip the wiring while we are building the wall and rewiring. That's the way that the brain works. The problem is we have already learned old information. And the process by which the brain undergoes this change is what's referred to as Habian synapsing. It's a process that takes time, because as we learn, the connections in our brain become stronger. The connections that seen information, that have recognized information before, becomes stronger. And only gets stronger the more often we use it, which means that if we have this myth, if we have this misconception that has been reiterated and reiterated and reiterated, that has become our central tenet to why we do certain things, that pathway within the brain, that network within the brain, has become what we call neurophysiologically hardwired. And in order to undo that hardwiring, we have to make those synapses change. And if we cannot make those synapses change, we cannot unlearn the incorrect information. Because those synapses have been used so often that they become so strong, which means if it is something that we've repeated and repeated and repeated, the myth, the misconception, that idea becomes the strongest connection, and it takes the most amount of work to undo, the most amount of work to change those connections, the most amount of time, and the most amount of repetitions in order to get the connections that are incorrect to be lost and the correct to be retained. All of which cannot be done while we're stuck in that fight or flight, when we're stuck in that stress response, when we're stuck in this change where we have high amounts of stress hormones, high amounts of fight or flight taking place, where the brain is set up in such a way that it is seeking information, but it's sensing all information as being a threat to survival. And that threat to survival means that I'm attending to everything, but I'm not actually retaining anything. And because I'm attending to everything, but not retaining anything, I'm unable to learn and differentiate between what is old, incorrect information and what is new, correct information. And because I'm stuck in this setting where I am under threat, where I'm feeling threatened by presentation of information that doesn't jive, that doesn't match with that myth, with that misconception that I've held onto for so long that has become part of who I am, then I'm stuck in a situation where I am anxious, where I am amped up, where I am cognitively alert to the danger around me. And because I'm cognitively alert to the danger around me, I'm not relaxed enough to allow for that Habian responsiveness, that Habian synapsing to take place to allow me to unlearn bad information and learn good information. And part of this is because of the myths and misconceptions are set up in such a way that they allow for an alluring reinforcement behavior. So much more than the scientific behavior, unless you are open-minded and willing to learn new information off the bat, where you're open to challenges to your ideas. And this is where part of the idea, and we'll get to this a little bit later on, is to reframe how the information being presented is a challenge. It's one of the things that when you start going into the brosphere of podcast stuff, when you start looking at a lot of the people who are upset about the quote-unquote wokeness of higher education, the fact that it's a liberal, put quotes around that idea, that is somehow against quote-unquote conservative ideas. It's not that. What it is this idea of challenging concepts, challenging myths, challenging misconceptions. It's something that we've seen over and over and over again. Every time we turn on the news, if it has to deal with a congressional hearing related to the Health and Human Services currently in the United States, if it's about what's going on with the CDC, if it's about what's going on with NIH, it's this contentiousness that doesn't allow us to get out of fight or flight. And since we cannot get out of fight or flight, we cannot learn. And we have to be able to learn from each other. And I'll explain why in a little bit here. The alluring nature and the reinforcements that we get from the myths and misconceptions take us beyond the physiological and anatomical changes that occur in the brain. There are several reasons for why unteaching myths are tedious. There are several reasons why unteaching misconceptions is a tumultuous endeavor. The very first reason is that myths and misconceptions thrive in their inherent attractiveness. They are simple. They are straightforward. This is X. This is Y. Scientific reality is nuanced. Science exists in a nuanced relationship. Reality exists in a nuanced relationship. Fields as complex as physiology, nutrition, and all of the other health sciences, they're messy. They demand consistency and not only be able to grasp scientific methods, but be able to keep up with the changing levels of understanding that occurs over time. What we know is true today is different than what we knew was true 100 years ago. But if we're holding on to what we knew was true 100 years ago, we're missing out on the new information. And the older information now becomes a misconception because the new information has a better explanation for why things occur. This requires effort. This requires patience. This requires the acceptance of the incremental progress that may present as incongruent findings and incongruent recommendations. One of the yelling points, and I don't want to call it a debate point, it was a yelling point in between the two cultures as related to all of the COVID recommendations, is that we got recommendation A on Monday and we got recommendation B on Wednesday. Why is it that the two recommendations are not the same and the difference was only 2 days? Because new evidence came out. And the evidence that came out challenged the conclusion that we reached with point A, with recommendation A, and led to recommendation B. When evidence changes in scientific understanding, we change our perspective. We let go of the old concept and we accept the new concept. That's where the nuance comes into play here. That's where the accepting of the scientific method and the scientific means for investigation comes into play. Myths, on the other hand, are seductive. They offer seductive shortcuts. They promise simplicity. They promise hope. They promise instant gratification. Just do this, don't do that. Just take this or just cut that from your diet. Easy sound bites that one can understand. One might be able to remember and possibly implement. They arrive on the whims of having a quick fix, a magic bullet that teases us through the offerings of the quick fix, of the magic bullet, of a reward. It offers our reward center a glimpse of a payoff. The allures create a fertile ground for the misconception to take root, appealing to our innate psychological need for ease, hope, and quick solutions in an ever-increasingly complex world. The more we know, the more complex things become. Once that idea, that misconception, that myth takes root, especially if it comes from a source that we see as having authority, as being an authority, or when it becomes the source of our identity, we rely upon our cognitive architecture to vigorously protect it. Protection that leaves us prone to logical fallacies and systemic errors in critical thinking, all done as guardians of these existing beliefs, all done to protect the preconceived notions, relying upon availability heuristics, the available heuristics of antidotes, the appeal to authority, and the confirmation bias in selecting evidence to form a wall against information that challenges that preconceived notion. Cognitive shortcuts that are meant to make life efficient and easy by generating stereotypes become formidable barriers to the introduction of evidence that challenges deeply ingrained beliefs. When these myths and misconceptions begin to define who we are, we risk falling prey to the sunken cost fallacies, where challenges to the beliefs about our health or about how our body works means challenging everything that we have become, everything we want people to know about us. And for those know-it-alls, or those that believe that they're know-it-alls, or those that think that they know the equivalent of a learned expert, there is an overestimation of their knowledge that typically is matched by an inability to admit what they don't know. You know, the Dunning-Kruger effect. Leading to their proclamations, their confident proclamations of facts, put quotes around that are patently false, that gets coupled with an unwillingness to change because they don't know what they don't know, becoming confrontational when their authority and when their expertise is challenged. Just watch any congressional hearing. Just watch any discussion coming out of the current HHS Secretary RFK's stance from and the MAHA stances, from everything as relates to nutritional standards to vaccines. It's this constant yelling and screaming, this constant berating and belittling, this constant unwillingness to accept what I don't know, because I think I know everything And because I think I know everything, I am unwilling to admit what I don't know.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
As a learned expert, we are willing to admit what I know, what I don't know, and more importantly, what do I think I know. We develop a continuum of understanding, and we're constantly challenging the what do I know. The scientific method is not set up to prove something. The scientific method is to challenge what we think we already know, or challenge the explanations for why things happen the way we think things happen. The reliance on the cognitive protections to the myths and misconceptions lead to an endpoint where the psychological cost of admitting error or writing off what has been held onto as being true becomes too high for the individual. This ultimately forces them to cling even harder to the myths, even harder to the misconceptions, and justify their rationales from past results, from past actions, from the antidotes, regardless of how logically sound and empirically supported the new information happens to be. A cognitive process that forces the myths, the misconceptions about how the body works, about our diet, about exercise, to become so deeply intertwined with the sense of self, so integrated and ingrained into the psyche, that we will believe the convenience of the myth, the convenience of the misconception, even when it becomes abundantly clear that what we're believing is not actually true, but a distortion of the facts. We take on a biased perspective. That bias is that what I am holding on to as being true is true, even if it's not true. It's a convincing argument. What ends up happening is that those who are holding on to these myths, holding on to these misconceptions, they convince themselves that the convenience of the myth or the convenience of the misconception is so true that it's the foundation for the identity. It's the core philosophy for who they are. It generates the labels that they live by, the labels that provide them a sense of belonging, a purpose to their lives, or a definition for who they are. The keto person, the marathoner, the power lifter. Those are all those identity labels. Those identity labels become who they are, and they will hold on to them regardless of any of the evidence that disproves their point of view. The sense of convenience can even allow for a sense of morality to build into how they live. The know-it-all person who becomes the holier-than-thou person is an ideal that we have discussed in our book, Dogmatic Diets, as it not only gives the ideals for developing groups, but it gives the ability to identify something as being good, put quotes around that, while other things as being bad, put quotes around that. Orient us down a course where accumulating good will cause that reward response, and sensing bad will amplify the need to seek out the good in order to get that reward response. It keeps us tied to the myth, keeps us tied to the misconception, to the point that it forms our worldview. It defines us. It's a process that makes the simple introduction of ideas that challenges the set of facts to be more than a challenge to the set of facts. It's a challenge to who we are, a psychological feeling that becomes highly uncomfortable, needing to have to dismantle and disassemble that part of our idea. It acts to elicit a sense of vulnerability, a sense of fear. Vulnerability and fear triggers fight or flight. It puts us into that amygdala-derived brain functions that is going to make learning difficult because we start to see everything as being a threat. And by seeing everything as being a threat, We will attend to all the information coming in, but we will not attune to the information. We will not figure out what information needs to be retained and what information needs to get lost because we're in survival mode at that point in time. That fear, that vulnerability that's triggering that stress, leading to that fight or flight, makes learning something that does not fit with the identity. It does not fit with the view of what I want to hold to be true. Does not fit with the identity of who I am, and acts as a powerful deterrent to the learning process. That's why we have problems with the myths and misconceptions. That's why we have this issue taking place where we have dueling, put quotes around that, debate centers around what health means. What do we have to do in order to be healthy? What is the safety of vaccines? What is the safety of eating processed foods? What foods should I be eating? What foods should I not be eating? How should I be exercising? How should I not be exercising? All of this leads into something that we have to look at, something we have to actually examine in ourselves as well as in others, and how we treat others and how we interact with others who might have a difference of opinion from our opinion. How can we overcome, and how can we teach that old dog a new trick? We have to limit the pain of unlearning. That is the key here. We have to keep the person, and we have to keep the group that we're trying to educate out of going into fight or flight. We have to present logical information. We have to present scientific information in such a way that we are not asking them to immediately let go of their identity. When all of these factors converge, asking someone to let go of a myth, let go of a misconception held onto about how the body functions or how health is attained, is not merely asking them to update a piece of information. It's asking them to make very difficult choices. It's asking them to confront cognitive dissonance. That uncomfortable mental stress of holding on to conflicting beliefs. Now, when we look at education, we have to go back to some of our ancient Greek philosophers who would tell us that the sign of an intelligent person is someone who can hold on to two dueling opposing ideas at the same time without going insane. And that's really true. That's what we have to be able to do. We have to be able to look at knowledge as a continuum of options. We have to be able to address, what does it mean to be correct? What does it mean to be incorrect within this idea? We have to confront that cognitive dissonance, not just with ourselves, but with others that we are challenging. We have to understand that it can be uncomfortable at times to learn new things, particularly new things that are challenging to everything that I've held on to, everything that I hold to be true, not only about me, but about the world. They have to be able to admit and accept wrongness. They have to be able to admit and accept that they were wrong without becoming embarrassed, without feeling vulnerable, or without being put into a sense of fear. Potentially, this means publicly threatening their self-esteem, publicly threatening their identity, which is why, once again, watch any of the congressional hearings as relates to a lot of the health issues. The amount of screaming, the amount of yelling, the temperature of the room is so high that there's no way you can actually have an intellectual conversation taking place in that room or have a general debate of understanding. It's all about sound bites. It's all about catchphrases. It's not about learning. It's not about conveyance of information. We have to dissociate the myths and misconception from their sense of self or from their identity. This is the hardest part here. Because of all of the other cognitive issues coming into play, all of the protectiveness that comes into play, you have to somehow dissociate what I am doing in my life from who I am. We want to have identity. We want to have labels to our identity, but those identities and those labels do not hold sway, do not hold long lastingness in terms of who I am and who I hope to be. It simply is how people might see me, but is not who I am. We have to discard sources of information that might provide comfort, that might provide hope, that might provide social belonging, if that source of information is not credible and is not reliable and is not offering valid empirical evidence. Valid empirical evidence always has to outweigh opinions when it comes to how my body works, how I can go about being healthy. Opinions are opinions, facts are facts. They are not the same thing. And one of the things we have to work towards is understanding that we have to discard information and particular sources of information that are not reliable, not valid. We have to challenge the viewpoint of an authority. And by challenging the viewpoint of the authority, it's going to risk ostracization from the group, because you're going to become an outsider to the group that you once belonged to. We have to offer them another group to come into, a sense of community within the discussion points about how the human body works and about how we can go about being healthy, that gives them an opportunity to have a new group to be within without doing this off of the logical fallacy of groupthink. We have to ask them to embark on a new and potentially challenging and less certain way of thinking. We have to allow them to understand the scientific method, how to become scientifically literate, how to become health literate, how to become nutrition literate in terms of where we get our information and how we go about understanding what the information means. Once again, we're living in a world of nuance. We're not living in a world of certainty. The more complexity is there, the more nuance we happen to need within the arguments, the greater the amount of continuum of options might be true. So what can we do? We have to get the correct information to filter in and displace the myths and misconceptions. This means that it's not simply being louder or presenting more facts. Once again, just watch any of the congressional hearings. Watch any of the confrontations that take place in between people who think that the louder person wins the argument. It requires a strategic means for communication. It's a strategic approach, one that starts with an empathetic view and a long game approach, and ends with using the myths or misconceptions to teach the correct information by having the relearner form a new impression, form a new viewpoint that is correct but founded on the old viewpoint that we know to be incorrect. Teaching needs to be done in a conversational approach where we admit our biases and try to come at it from an unbiased perspective. An empathetic approach with understanding and curiosity, not judgment and accusation. Be curious, not judgmental. An approach meant to keep the person out of their fight or flight response so that learning can take place. This means working the conversations towards understanding, working the conversations to recognize the psychological risks that come into play, and the emotional responses that take place when beliefs are challenged. If there's an emotional response to the challenge of beliefs, no learning will take place. If there's an emotional response to the challenge, no learning will take place. The way in which we can challenge the misconceptions, the way in which we can challenge the myths without becoming confrontational, is by having a conversation that is centered around asking open-ended questions and having dialogue. A dialogue that will encourage self-reflection in the discourse without taking a stance of preaching about what is true. What is fact versus what is myth? What is fact versus what is misconception? Allowing the conversation to connect with the shared goals seen in the myth, seen in the misconception, with what we factually know to be true. Framing around evidence-based approaches as paths to get to the desired outcome. By framing around this, we're able to frame the pathway to the desired outcome for the person with the misconception. That doesn't come from a stance of superiority, a position that holding the myth or believing the misconception makes them ignorant. We are not taking a path, not taking a stance. where the person who has the myth, person who has the misconception, is somehow an ignorant person. They may not understand, they may not have all of the information available, but to stipulate that they are ignorant is automatically going to put them on the defensive. You have to work to get them to free themselves from the entrenched position. Work to frame the conversation around what if the myth, what if the misconception weren't entirely true. Pull in ambiguity and complexity. Pull in how ambiguity and complexity is embraced by the science and allows for the uncertainty and the alternatives with the idea that science is about refuting the alternatives through empirical evidence, not accepting the position that I'm holding to be true. Employ and use critical thinking. Ask how, ask why questions. Present alternatives to show how the myth is a myth, how a misconception is a misconception. Ask for explanations. Provide alternatives to those explanations, once again, without becoming confrontational and without becoming preachy, without taking the stance of, I know you don't know. I'm smart, you're ignorant. If you take those positions, you're automatically not going to go any further in the conversation. You're not going to be able to teach that old dog a new trick. You're not going to be able to displace the myth and the misconception. You have to model how to use the benefits of evidence-based practices, evidence-based thoughts, in your own actions. Show how you can evaluate information and results without making the others feel inadequate or ignorant. Reinforce the ideas that everyone was going to fall somewhere on the continuum of responses. Once again, we have the bell curve of responses. 95% of the population is going to fall somewhere in that bell curve around the average response. The outliers are going to be in those tail ends. Yes, you may have a cousin that somehow took this one medicine and is completely free of cancer. Never got sick because they took this one supplement. But this may be on that one extreme of the normal curve, and it doesn't represent everyone. Reinforce the idea that everyone's going to fall on that continuum of responses, and what happens to them is on that continuum, but is not the continuum. I repeat. What happens to them is going to be on the continuum, but is not the continuum. This process is a daunting task. It's a time-consuming task. It's an energy-depleting task. It takes more time and more effort to unteach incorrect information than it does to teach the correct information. It's frustrating. It's repetitive. It's so repetitive and so frustrating that a lot of times we just want to give up. We want to throw our hands in the air and say, okay, be done with it. I don't want to have this conversation anymore. But that doesn't behoove us either. We have to be honest with ourselves. We have to be honest with the person whose opinions we are trying to sway away from the myths and misconceptions towards the true understanding. If we are honest about how to be scientifically literate, how to be health literate, how to be nutrient literate, how to understand the nuances of science informing our understanding of how the body works, we can bring people around, we can get people to let go of the myths, let go of the misconceptions. If we present information in an accessible way without oversimplifying it to the point of inaccuracy, or oversimplify it to the point of inaccuracy in a way that challenges but does not threaten, then unlearning the myth, unlearning the misconception is possible. The dispelling of myths and misconceptions about how our body works, how we can be healthy, is a monumental task. It requires dismantling of deeply fortified psychological, cognitive, and cultural constructs. It's a battle not just against misinformation, it's a battle against our psychological tendencies and our heuristics, our stereotypes. By understanding the facts that are at play, the alluring simplicity of the myths and misconceptions, the tenacious cognitive biases that we hold on to keep that simplistic, heuristic, simple the emotional investment we have in our understanding of the myths and misconceptions as it forms my identity, and the pervasive social reinforcements to those identities, all of which hinder learning. That's the battle. That's the battle we're facing. It's not just the misinformation battle. It's that battle of how can we get into the person to get them to change the way in which their brain is actually wired, the way in which they're actually able to accept information. We can approach this challenge with greater patience, with greater empathy, and ultimately develop a more effective strategy for fostering general inquiry, general discussion. But we have to understand this is the way the battle's set up. It's not just good information versus misinformation, good information versus disinformation. It's not just screaming at the person saying, that's disinformation, that's misinformation, I have the facts. We have to approach this challenge with patience, with empathy, with the ultimate desire to develop better, genuine, scientific, in health literacy and understanding. Understanding how learning occurs through understanding the physiology and anatomical changes that take place when we learn, or more importantly, when we refuse to learn due to the stresses placed on us, through the challenges to the heuristics, challenges to the preconceived notions, challenges to the misconceptions. If we can form an approach around this, where we understand what's taking place, where we understand what takes place when we learn versus, more importantly, when we refuse to unlearn, it makes unlearning the myths and misconceptions possible. A possibility as long as the goal is not to win the argument, but to open minds to a more robust set of evidence that changes one's understanding about how our body works and what it means to be healthy. To unseat the myth, unseat the misconception from our mindset of what is true, so that we're able to have a greater understanding of the complexity of our body, an understanding of the nuanced nature of reality that we live in. Well, thanks for listening. Well, if we got a bit out of this conversation, once again, if you have questions or comments, please leave it for us. We're more than happy to discuss this in either future talks or in more written information that we present. Please make sure that if you're liking what we're putting out there, give us that 5-star rating, give us that thumbs up. Let us know that we're doing a good job. Share with all your friends and family. Share with all of your coworkers. If you like what we're putting out there, please make sure you're following us here on the podcast. Make sure you subscribe to follow us on YouTube, The Written Stuff and Substack, as well as the quick takes we post to Instagram and to Threads, and now on Blue Sky. Stay tuned for future discussions about the myths and misconceptions about how the human body works, how we can go about living a healthy lifestyle based on the abundance of scientific information that we now have available to us.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.